8032 extension 221 and speak with Aaron.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring a Director of Underwriting to solicit and oversee the underwriting and online advertising for KBOO. For this part-time position, we are looking for someone with sales experience, experience in community radio, who has a flexible schedule, skills with computers and people, and the ability to work independently in a fast-paced work environment. KBOO Community Radio is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer. Women and people of color are encouraged to apply. Deadline to apply is Sunday, May 6th, 2018, at midnight. More information can be found at kboo.fm/underwriting-hire-2018.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 8 o'clock. Time for Positively Revolting.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
Comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
And you are listening to Positively Revolting here in the studios of KBOO, your community radio station. I'm Ani, and this morning we will be talking about the Village Building Convergence. And this is an annual event. I'm always super excited to bring organizers and volunteers from the Village Building Convergence on the air. This morning we have Matt Beeble joining us. Good morning, Matt.
Thank you. Good morning, Ani.
And I just want to let folks know there are a couple of events coming right up, not to do with the VBC, but I want people to, if you haven't had a chance to know that these things are happening, these are important, and also all about community and, well, protecting it. Let's talk for a second about the Holgate Manor Tenants Union. And the Holgate Manor Tenants Union is organizing to stop rent hikes and displacement and to keep their community together. Their landlord is a California investor named Fred Kleinbub, and he has not responded to the union's request. So tenants are holding a community support rally to show the union's strength and to pressure him into doing the right thing. So they're asking people to join them in solidarity and to call on their landlord, Fred Kleinbub, to sell the Holgate Manor to the Portland Housing Bureau so it can become permanently affordable housing. You can contact the Holgate Manor Tenants Union at holgatemanortu@gmail.com. You can also text Holgate to 34534 to learn more about their campaign. Let's see. There will be a rally, actually, at Kenilworth Park. This is me flipping through pages. Oops. A rally at Kenilworth Park. Yes. Joining in solidarity. I'll find out more about exactly what time that rally is before the show ends. Okay. So there's that. And, gosh. There is also the 350 PDX holding an action on Monday, May 7th, and that's from 11 in the morning till 1 in the afternoon, and that's next Monday. It's going to be across from Pioneer Square at 811 Southwest 6th Avenue at Chase. And that's because Chase Bank is the number one funder of fossil fuel infrastructure in the U.S. And it's the only U.S. funder of the LNG terminal at Jordan Cove in Coos Bay. Perhaps you've heard about Jordan Cove in Coos Bay. If you haven't, find out more about it. We've had some information on KBOO, and we'll have plenty more in the future, but check it out, because that's fairly much, it's a very urgent situation. So actually, both of these things are urgent. There's a lot going on right now that is important to stay on top of, be aware of, and be active about, because, you know, as we say, the world's kind of on fire, and there is no time like the present to get involved, to co-create it and shape it and make it a better place for all of us. And that brings me to the work of the Village Building Convergence. So, Matt, thank you so much for joining us this morning. I just want to, for a moment, talk a little bit about the background of the Village Building Convergence. It is an event that has happened annually here for, this is the 18th, is it not?
That's right.
And the idea behind the Village Building Convergence, how did it start in the first place? What are the aims of the Village Building Convergence?
Well, I'd like to go back to the seed of the organization that puts on the Village Building Convergence, which is the City Repair Project. And I would start by saying that there's a lot of disconnection all around us. We live in cities. Most people listening to the station live in Portland and the surrounding metro area. And cities inherently are disconnective. And that might seem strange in the sense that there's a lot of people in cities and there are lots of opportunities. But the design of the city, the very nature of the design, is disconnective. We live in this urban grid environment where we're essentially on these little islands called blocks, and the priority for travel is by vehicle, which is not just disconnective, but also life-threatening. And those used to be the pathways and the plazas and the intersections and places where people would gather and where markets would be held, and those crossroads of the cities and before the cities of the towns and villages, well, that's where people would gather and get to know each other. That's where the birthday parties would happen and the weddings would happen. And over time, we've sort of slowly lost our connection to place in certain capacities in certain ways. And in the urban environment, you might see thousands of people in a day and not really have a meaningful connection with a single one of them. And that's one of the really concerning things about where we're going, is that there's so many things that are disconnecting us. And this is something that I think that whether or not we recognize it, we all are affected by it and are looking for ways to fill this hunger that we have for connection. Now, I don't have a degree in psychology, but what I know in my heart to be true is that people fill this need for belonging and for being a part of something in a lot of ways that aren't healthy or constructive, in pursuit of feeling satisfied, in pursuit of wanting to address a sensation of not really being whole or complete. And I think that a lot of addiction and unhealthy behaviors come from that. And It's sort of this little bit of madness that we all carry in the urban environment. And you can see it in people's faces when, we all put on our mask and smile. And when we know that we're interacting, there's sort of a different way that we appear sometimes. But when you see people that don't know that they're not on, or they're not talking to somebody, the face that they're wearing is the face that they're feeling, which is that there's this sadness and this emptiness. And so the reason why I'm bringing all this up is because part of the solution has to come from identifying where that void is and what can actually fill it and make those connections. And the origins of the City Repair Organization, nobody was planning on starting an organization. And I think a lot of good organizations began that way. And there were a lot of people that were influential. One of the more influential persons was my friend Mark Lakeman. He's one of the co-founders of the City Repair Project. And he was trained as an architect and really grew increasingly frustrated with the sort of status quo nature of the architecture trajectory, and took some time after leaving a job to do some traveling and reflecting and speaking with folks across a wide range of cultures, and essentially learned that there's a lot of connection between our sort of craziness and the environments that we're in, and that the straight line and the disconnected nature of the design of the city are really at the root of that. And so he was inspired to infuse his desire to build spaces that are connective with some of the wisdom that he had gained on some of his travels after leaving the job. And some of the kind of foundational elements of that were to just bring life back into buildings, have buildings that reflect life and life forms and life shapes and, you know, life materials. And one of the first projects that happened years ago, I think in the mid-90s, was to build a community gathering space.
Yes.
Out of a lot of recycled materials, very little expense whatsoever. It was really an expression, an artistic expression of this simultaneous deep desire to find connection and I think artistic output for this cultural madness that we all carry. And that's actually, I think, where some of the most beautiful artwork comes from. And that little structure that was named the Monday or the Moonday Tea House became very popular. Now, this was before my time, and so I've heard stories and I've seen pictures, and what I understand was happening was that people had an opportunity to gather. It wasn't something where there's necessarily an admission. It's like, come as you are, bring some food, bring an instrument, and just be here. And that happened over time and gaining popularity. And I've seen some photographs of like people literally spilling out of this little hand-built structure, that part of it was covered, part of it was open to the sky, and mm-hmm. in its very design was actually made to represent a child in utero, like the most kind of essential human shape before we even come out into the world, like this kind mm-hmm. of nestled, nurtured space. And that, without knowing it at the time, really was what seeded the city repair project and eventually the village building convergence, was this idea of like creating spaces that nurture and connect. And the short story, because this story could take the whole hour that we have today, is that the city, it was an unpermitted structure, and the city required that it was taken down in the community as a response to that. There was something that was created in that community, and we've really worked to kind of figure out what that was, because there was a cohesion that didn't exist at the same level prior to this gathering space that was made, that did exist when it was taken down. And people recognized for maybe the first time that we can create our community. We can design and build parts of structures and things in our community that allow us the space to connect with each other. And we don't really know that we have that need until you start to fill it a little bit and then recognize that, oh my goodness.
Oh yeah, that's what's been missing.
What has been missing.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so the community, in a response to having to take down this structure, decided to paint their intersection, paint a mural. And it was a little bit of a rogue action, but it was the next step for them. Like, we need to do something together. Like, this is our place. And, you know, this is where people used to gather. And, you know, we really need to get that back. And while the city wasn't happy about that either, there was a study that was conducted on the impact of that intersection painting. And people were really surprised at how many positive attributes that intersection painting created. And some of them, the city's a little bit more excited about. Some of them, they're not in, I think, full acknowledgement of. But what I understand and what I heard the study revealed was that it did actually calm traffic. People slowed down. Yeah. So similar role as speed bumps, that there's something that you know is like coming up. But the other, some of the unexpected outcomes were that people felt that their community was more connective. There were fewer thefts and reports of crimes in the area. And we've really tried to unpack this over the years, because, you know, this is over 20 years ago now. And the basic theory is that if people are invited to participate in the creation of space where they live, they're not going to be the ones to deface it. They're going to be the ones to protect it. And so that's the seed of the City Repair Project.
That's great. I think there's so much there that we can sort of spin off of, and I just want to emphasize that the alienated design of the city and how You know, again, you were talking about the grid-based city. When we've spoken with Mark Lakeman in the past, we've talked about how that was sort of a military design that makes sort of a very easy, easy for car traffic, easy for also control. And how, as you know, as we are all outwards facing, not sharing space with our neighbors, our property backyards are usually fenced or hedged or in some way separated from our neighbors' backyards, and we don't usually see each other while we're hanging out in that space. So we're just looking out onto a street, looking outwards. And again, it's a design that encourages alienation and disconnection. And so, moving forward, people have probably seen some projects that the Village Building Convergence have built up over the years. Can you maybe give the locations of a few of the very noticeable projects in case people are still like, well, that's interesting, but I don't know what you're talking about. There are some spaces that most people who traverse Portland have seen.
Yeah, sure. So that very first intersection painting was on 8th and Sherritt Street in the Soad neighborhood, and that continues to be an intersection painting site. We call them intersection repairs because we're repairing the function of the intersection to include people and the community that lives there. And so that's one of the more well-known ones. And what has happened after that first intersection painting, folks that initiated that really understood that they were onto something, and that's where some of the community members begin to meet and ask the question, well, if this is really kind of helping us feel connected, is this something that can be extrapolated out and grow and be a part of neighborhoods and other places? Is this worth replicating? And so that's really how the City Repair Project was born. In the Village Building Convergence was a project of that newly formed nonprofit, where the very first one was actually called the Natural Building Convergence, but it was expanded to include a lot of other types of things, which is to say that another pattern that we have gotten away from is that we used to have to rely on our community to like repair our house or literally the barn raising, like assembling and lifting those big wooden framed walls of the barn. And in a lot of places around the world, it looks different, but the function is the same. That there are times of year where the community comes together to support a common cause, and that has a really important role in the strength of the social fabric of that place. And so, again, without realizing it, we've kind of lost some of that. And so that first tea house and that first intersection painting kind of reinvigorated that. So it's called Sherritt Square. Again, it's at 8th and Sherritt. And it will be repainted again as part of the 18th Annual Village Building Convergence. And one of the neat aspects of installing these intersection paintings, not only do people really respond to it, and you see people walking by or biking by or even driving really slow in their car to look at it and ask, like, what's going on? That one installation spawns a lot of other exciting projects because people all of a sudden understand that it's possible. It's literally like the flag of possibility for what neighbors can do in their neighborhoods. And so you'll see that there are other intersection paintings that are pretty well known. The Sunnyside Piazza near the Sunnyside Environmental School is another example of one. And
And that intersection's on Yam Hill at about 34th?
34th, 33rd, something right around there. You can't miss it.
You really can't.
And both of those intersections are really good examples of kind of how this can spread, because after the installation of the intersection painting, the communities begin asking, like, well, what else can we do? What else is possible? And that's the key. It's like, what else is possible? Right. And so there's the integration of some ecological parts. There's some planters with, you know, sometimes a take on having some of that be edible too. And, you know, we really try to bring permaculture, the sort of simultaneous benefit of people and nature, into the design of these public projects. So a lot of times there'll be some fruit trees and some kind of native beneficial plants and more art, not just in the intersection, but sometimes like tile mosaic on the walls, even sculptural elements that are above the sidewalk that really make the place feel special. There are a lot of creative features. And what's interesting and worth noting is that City Repair never prescribes what should happen in a particular place. And sometimes folks come, the reason why I say this is because sometimes folks inquire saying like, well, can you all do this for us? Or and our response is, well, what we really want to see is that you've talked to your neighbors and met and asked as a group, what's missing from our neighborhood,
right,
and come up with a vision for what that would look like. Draw it out even on like a napkin or something like that, just to try to get some cohesion around an idea that would improve your neighborhood. Bring that idea to the City Repair Project, and what the City Repair Project does now is that we help support groups of neighbors in manifesting their project vision. So we've gone through all of the pains to make sure that we understand the permitting process. We have connections with really cheap or free resources and materials. I want to give a big shout out to the Rebuilding Center. Every single year, the Rebuilding Center donates thousands of dollars of materials, of reused materials, for these projects, mm-hmm, to be able to build from. So it's not even like, hey, get a super discounted cost on this. No, they support it so strongly, they're giving it away.
Right.
Miller Paint donates, they give basically half price on the paints that are creating this, because we're using street grade paints, really good quality paints for those. There are many other intersection paintings throughout the city. What's really fun sometimes, I love maps, and on Google Maps or Google Earth, you can actually look around the city and find some of these,
yes,
intersection paintings. I don't know off the top of my head all the locations of them, but I do know that over the last 17 years, there's been, I think, over 50 intersections that have been painted. Some of them, it's a 1 or 2 year thing, and after a number of years, it just sort of fades, and you know, you might just see like little hints of it. And then the best case scenario, what we really hope is that the community really turns it into an annual event. Now,
right,
some neighborhoods repaint the same design and they love that design. Other neighborhoods, they change it up every single year. And so every year they go through a new design process around what that looks like. But to actually participate in the painting, a lot of people find out about it because they were just riding their bike or walking by when this was happening. And I love seeing the look on people's faces when they walk up to this, because their jaw just drops and they're like, what is happening? What's going on here? Like, I've never seen anything like this in my life. The first time that I saw this, I had never seen anything like this in my life. And it's transformative. And somebody walks up
it
to
is.
You and hands you a paintbrush and says, can you help us? And before you know it, you know, folks that had no idea what was going on, they're painting and they're laughing.
Right.
They're little kids, like, trying to keep their footprints of paint, like, off of different colors. And everybody's just having a blast. And
so, so really, I mean, in that very participatory nature of the projects, is anti-alienation to begin with. It is connecting.
Yeah.
It is participatory. Also, I love that there are basically a wonderful sort of symbiotic, synergistic coming together of the permaculture, sort of food and native plants and actual, you know, the life of the place with the low-impact building and natural building philosophy and materials,
mm-hmm,
and the participatory nature and the art and the beauty of it all. So it's like this four tier or four parts coming together in a way that I think truly embodies, you know, the idea of recreating our world together. And this time we're just looking at the microcosm of our own backyards in a very literal way. And that's why I think every year the Village Building Convergence is one of the more exciting things that happens in Portland. I want to let listeners have a chance to interact and ask your questions or make your comments about projects that you've been involved with. I know I myself have been involved with a few of the intersection repair paintings. Also, I helped to do mosaic work on a bench a block from my house years ago. And these, again, are wonderful ways to spend good time with your neighbors. You know, this a bench was in front of a house that I knew the neighbors by name. We waved at each other.
Mm-hmm.
But did we ever sit down and actually spend an afternoon together before? No, but we sure did while we were building this bench. And it's a great way to bring people closer.
Yeah, and that's a story over and over again, that folks maybe had a desire to be more connective, but for so many reasons, it doesn't happen. And I think we've grown a little bit shy of just saying hi and having, you know, a couple of minutes of conversation that's a little bit more meaningful than how's it going, you know, this in the news, that in sports,
sure,
whatever. And the very first tea house, there's kind of like a secret ingredient to this, and it does have to do with tea, drinking tea, and I'll tell you why. It's very interesting that giving folks a reason to just be in one place for like 5 minutes, literally the time it takes to drink a cup of tea, is just enough time to have a little bit more of a meaningful conversation with people that are next to you. And so in the work that City Repair does in a lot of events, either our own or events that we're participating in, we set up some kind of a tea station, and some of the listeners, I'm sure, have seen one or two of the different incarnations of the tea fleet.
Yes.
The tea horse, tea pony. There's some that are mobile. Those are mobile. Some are stationary. Tea whale. There's now the tea crab, which debuted at Earth Day at Portland Community College. And these are mostly mobile gathering spaces. How can we create village? How can we build community by creating kind of like a living room and kind of almost like a pop-up village kind of a thing? Folks are like, whoa, it's free? Like, yeah, come and sit down, enjoy. We put out some rugs and some pillows and just make a cozy space. And that alone is enough to lead to a little bit of connection. And of course, the extension of that, and what has evolved is that this event, the Village Building Convergence, is just a much larger living room, you know, Portland living room with lots of community projects. This year, almost 40 community projects. It's the one of the largest
that
years yet.
That is awesome.
And yeah.
Let me go ahead and give the phone number out. 503-231-8187 is the number to call us this morning here at KABU. It's a wonderful a conversation about coming together in a space that we can create together that has also the principles of permaculture and natural building involved. It's art, it's art, it's beauty, it's neighbors, it's community building. I'm with Matt Bebo this morning. He is an organizer with the Village Building Convergence and City Repair. And I know earlier we started off with some information, and I do want to give people a little bit more information on the action tomorrow for the Holgate Manor Tenants Union. And I'm actually going to connect this back in just about 1 second. And so the Holgate Manor Tenants Union, the action is tomorrow. That's Saturday the 5th, and it's 1 to 4 p.m. in Kenilworth Park. Okay? So that's tomorrow, 1 to 4 p.m., supporting the Holgate Manor Tenants Union at Kenilworth Park on Saturday the 5th. I guess one of the reasons why I think that's super important, well, first of all, housing justice is a human right, and housing is at a crisis point here in Portland. But also, as we're looking at the alienated nature of the city and of our society, and we realize so many people have been displaced from the communities that they have been a part of here in Portland. Whether that's just, you know, by and large, it's economically driven through oftentimes through the PDC without much forethought. That kind of displacement is absolutely damaging to our society and to the people in our communities, to us, right? And so actually supporting a union of tenants who are trying to protect the building in which they live in so that they can remain in community together seems absolutely part and parcel to our discussion this morning. So that's why I really wanted to emphasize that action. And I also want to thank Derek for making sure that, you know, I had that information this morning. I know that there is a caller right now who has more information about actions this weekend. Because like I said earlier, the world's on fire, and it's really important to see what's going on and to get active about it. So, Edie, are you still with us?
Yes, thank you very much.
Hi, Edie. What's
tonight,
going on?
In addition to City Repair, we have Community and Soul Repair. Tonight from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. under the Hawthorne Bridge at Southwest NATO and Jefferson will be the U.S. International Committee for Human Rights in the Philippines. They're going to have a Stop the Killings caravan using Joe Keating's bus. It's been repainted, a tour from Seattle down Southern California. We have speakers, human rights peace activists from the Philippines, and youth here. You really need to get involved with P-Chirp, Gaia, Malaya, Mayan, Gabriella. These groups of youth in the Portland and Seattle area, and over my half century of activism, are the most inspiring, caring, playful, intelligent, committed, courageous folks who are involved with trips to the Philippines in solidarity. So come today, 5:30 to 7:30, under the Hawthorne Bridge, Southwest NATO. Before and after, you could go to the Cinco de Mayo party, but get connected, be inspired, give solidarity, and have some fun. Thank you so much.
Thank you for that information, Edie. So that's 5:30 to 7:30 on the west end of the underneath side of the Hawthorne Bridge, NATO Parkway and Jefferson, supporting human rights in the Philippines. Also, getting to know that the bus that was named Cool is still out and doing tours for activists is awesome. We have availed ourselves of the bus named Cool, Joe Keating's school bus, a few times here at KABU. And for those longtime activists in Portland, you may remember it as the bus that would take folks up to Eagle Creek from various parking lots around town. So good to see that people are still using those resources. That's great. There is so much going on. I want to once again say the number to call in to join this conversation is 503-231-8187. I'm here with Matt Bebo. I'm Ani. You're listening to Positively Revolting. This is a talk radio program every week that is dedicated to sort of calling out the things that need to be ended and changed, transformed in the old world while we co-create the new world together. And we're talking about the village building convergence and how, in fact, that is one fabulous example of co-creation and making our communities whole and finding our place within our communities again and finding our place in a very literal way. When we talk about the work of the Village Building Convergence. So it's coming up. There's a process that really can take place all year round, right? From the time that you're first talking to your neighbors about what's missing. Should we have a bench? Should we have, you know, we have a few plum trees and a few cherry trees. Maybe we want a bench and, you know, a little table here and we can all sit down and have fruit together during that, you know, whatever it is that neighbors sort of come together around. And I've seen neighbors come together around sort of corner composting areas and little book kiosks and giveaway kiosks, benches. I've seen a lot of different ideas put into play. So that, again, that's sort of up to the neighbors to decide what is going to be helpful for that couple of blocks. How can people use the space to actually re-engage in the commons? The whole idea of the commons has been lost in this country, right?
Yeah, and we want to help all of the listeners and the city of Portland and, you know, anybody anywhere who feels disconnected from place regain that.
Yeah.
And the focus on the single property, you know, whether you're renting or you own, that's really been problematic, and everybody's got their fences up. Mm-hmm. There's definitely more of an emphasis on how things appear from the front. So this theme of facade, we wear facades. Mm-hmm. Our houses and yards and car in the driveway is a facade, and there's usually a pretty big difference between what the front yard looks like and what the backyard looks like. But really, again, if you like, kind of take the bird's eye view, there would be a large area in between all of the houses if they were not segmented off. So everybody could have more by sharing the center. And one of the designs that we really try to support is this notion of getting back to some shared space. One year for the Village Building Convergence, one of our themes for the night was national defense, which was to basically consider taking some of the fences down. That's our version of national defense. And that doesn't work for everybody. In some cases, it's to put up a gate so that you can use it sometimes, but just reconnect some of the pathways so that people can get together. where they live, because one of the ways, as we know, that we can be taken most advantage of is when we're disconnected from each yeah. other. So what might seem on the surface like kind of like a playful community type thing really has some deep, deep function for community resiliency. Knowing who your neighbors are, knowing what skills and resources they have, it's really important in meeting our needs without relying on a lot of external resources and decision makers. And so that's another like really important point, is that resiliency at the community scale has to start with connecting with people and finding out what part of the puzzle they hold or they have resources for. What are the needs and resources? You know, one of the very first, and I think that this was something that was contributed by a very young girl, took a piece of paper and started connecting. It was a map of the different properties in the neighborhood. And the story that I heard was that she was sort of saying like, well, what's the connection between this person, and this person, and this person? And kind of born from this really, I think, wonderful perspective that this child had, is that we are really disconnected from what skills and resources the yeah. folks around us have. And it is somewhat of a utilitarian view. You know, I don't think that that's the only reason why we should be connected with each other. But we travel really far and use a lot of resources to meet our needs outside of our neighborhoods. Most folks don't work very close to where they live, and that's obviously getting worse mm-hmm. With the cost of housing. And so how can we learn more about what's local, what's very local to us, and invest our time, invest our money, invest our skills very locally? And so to think about, sure, you can create projects that invite people in your own space, but we also encourage folks to think a little bit bigger than that. Think yeah. block scale. What can you do in your block scale? So you mentioned community composting station, and that's a really good example of something like, a lot of people have a little compost pile, and honestly, not very many of them are going super well, partly just because of the scale. Most houses are four people or three people, kind of small, and you know, compost really requires a critical mass of material to be really rocking. And the perfect scale for compost is the block scale, right? Yeah. To have like 8, 10, 12 households contributing to that. And so there would just be then in that case one compost pile to maintain. And we also, and this is something that the neighborhood around Sherritt Square has implemented as sort of another what can we do here as uh-huh. these things begin to unfold and as people begin to realize the potential, is that there's a community composting area, also a spot where people can bring their bulk materials like leaves that they've raked. It's kind of funny, you know, we rake up all the leaves and the city comes picks them up, and then next spring we buy compost from the leaves that we gave the city, you know, and then reapply it. And so just right. kind of connecting the cycles a little bit closer to home and getting more of what we need for our own health and wellness and for the soil's health and wellness. And we can do a much better job
meeting our own needs.
Meeting
right?
our own needs, exactly.
So the talking, the discussion with your neighbors, coming together to plan, can happen at any time. But then, come around January or so, it's time to actually turn in proposals for the following year. Is that?
That's right. Because this process does take a little bit of time, because what folks don't always recognize is that there's a lot of behind-the-scenes work that happens
Absolutely.
For the planning of these projects. So around, I think we're doing it a little bit earlier now. I think in November now, we're actually launching what we call the Request for Proposals, and it's an opportunity for like you and your neighbors to consider in a little bit more detail what a project could look like. And I guess I would say for the listeners, just think for a moment now, what would be an ideal addition to your neighborhood where you live, where you would get community support to do it? Take that seed of an idea, talk to a couple people about it in the next week, and participate in the Village Building Fund to see how these seeds of ideas 9 months before the Village Building Convergence manifest into a coordinated building week. It's actually 10 days where these almost 40 projects are all building at the same time, and that's what makes this event really robust. And we'll talk a little bit about some of the other aspects mm-hmm. of the event soon, but around November, December, we really want to hear from groups of neighbors on what their ideas, and then City Repair coaches those groups on the pathways to having a successful project. So the inspiration and the motivation really comes from the groups of neighbors, City Repair. We're more or less facilitators and, you know, folks saying, like, we believe in you, you can do it. Because a lot of times what holds us back is that somebody tells us you can't do it or no. And in this case, when a public official or somebody says, like, no, you can't do that, that's public space. You know, you can't. That's just such a ridiculous thing. And that's actually been said before. And that really got some of us
you can't
in the earlier
that.
Years
it's
really
public
fired up.
Space.
Yeah, yeah. There's this documentary about it.
That has always just blown my mind. And it is so typical, I think, of the underlying sickness of our society.
Yeah. And I'll say that I think that Portland's coming around. There's a lot more openness and excitement at the city level around projects that literally and figuratively straddle public and private space.
Yeah.
You know, there's all these agreements and invisible lines that can do this here, but you can't do it here. You can do that, but you can't do that. And we're saying, wait a minute. We're taking like a step back here and saying, this is ridiculous. And like, I really want to be able to utilize this space that's split between what the city owns and the planning strip and my yard. And how can we utilize that, because we're so oftentimes limited by these lines of who owns what. The ownership there, that's not something that is going to change really rapidly, but what we can change rapidly and what is accessible and has been demonstrated through this work is just a more creative use of that space. And so we've gotten a lot of support over the years from the city of Portland. The Bureau of Transportation has been a champion of some of the work that we've done, because everybody wins.
Again, that number, if you want to join in this conversation this morning, is 503-231-8187. Join us. Let us know about your ideas of community and actually placemaking in your neighborhood. Have you been in the area long? Do you know your neighbors? How are you getting involved in your community? What kind of vision do you have for your neighborhood? And those are the questions I have for our listeners. Maybe you have some other questions, or you would like to make other comments. But the number to do all of that is 503-231-8187. And so, looking forward to the VBC event, the 10-day happening. It starts June 1st, yes?
That's right. Yeah, this year, the Village Building Convergence will run from June 1st to June 10th. And that 10-day window really gives the projects enough time to reach completion. And we really are supporting, you know, the more of a trade economy and relying very little on money. So a lot of what's happening through the Village Building Convergence is happening because people are recognizing the value and they're offering something. And so say you're hosting a project site, you have probably a pretty ambitious schedule set out, and that's not going to be finished if it's just you and your immediate neighbors. And so by having all these projects happen at the same time, City Repair, and through this event, the Village Building Convergence, we put out a big call, you know, kind of like we're doing right now, and saying that we need your help, we need your support. Support the projects that are taking a risk and trusting that the community will be there to help them literally transform underused spaces into really thriving community places. And the trade is that a lot of times the work happening at a site will require a particular skill. Now, a lot of it you can just, of course, walk right in and jump in, but there are some projects that there's some technique to it, like with natural building, whether you're using tools to work with wood or cob, you know, using more of like an earthen structural material. Folks will show up in the morning and get a little bit of a training on the material and how to do it. And so it's sort of like a free workshop in the trade, is that then you stick around for the rest of the morning and the afternoon and help the project build. So we're sharing skills, knowledge, resources, building community, increasing sense of place, which leads to stronger commitment to protecting place, greater capacity to coordinate when place is threatened, and, you know, all of the amazing things that are happening right now. It's a really amazing time to be alive. Yes, you said the world is on fire, and there's no shortage of opportunities to get involved. I think at the very root of like where we live, if we're nurtured, if we're supporting each other, it allows us more capacity to figure out how we can be more effective in that other work and coordinate ourselves more effectively.
Absolutely. So there's the call for volunteers to help with the placemaking projects, the 40 different placemaking projects around the city. There's also a gathering that will be happening, or gatherings that are happening with speakers and information and sort of a coming together. You want to talk about those?
Sure, yeah. And so it doesn't just end with the daytime events.
Right.
So during the day, it's a very... very sort of bustling scene, a lot of people getting dirty and laughing and supporting each other, and that's really lovely. And the model that's evolved over the years is that then in evening time, we host a community gathering. And some years there are more nights of evening programming, and some years there are less. But the pattern is there. That's the sort of community celebration. And that's also, in a lot of places around the world, that's a very important aspect to celebrate the efforts. And food is one of the greatest connectors of people. So
totally.
There's a community dinner. There's a whole list of companies on our website that you can check out that donate food to our cause because they believe in us so strongly. And so we put on a wonderful community meal, and we have inspiring speakers or panels, and in some cases some music to go along with that. So there's this pattern of, you know, out into the community during the day and then convening on a central location at night to kind of have that sense of a bigger community and to nourish ourselves and to let off some of that energy from the day. And so that starts with our very first opening night, which is June 1st. We've invited a speaker who has come to the Village of Building Convergence in the past and who always is really inspirational and draws a wonderful crowd, and that's John Young, who's a leader in the fields of nature connection, and through his work and through his travels has really gotten a sense of some of the commonalities around what connects people to place, not just in nature, but also in the cities, because a lot of times folks are like, well, like I need to get out of the city to get connected with nature, but that sort of duality does cause further disconnection. We can actually find ways to connect in the city. The Village Building Convergence is one example, but just subtly, like, how can we support life in nature right where we live, in our backyard, in our community? And so some of the projects actually do focus on that. Mark Lakeman is going to give his very inspirational The Village Lives presentation on Sunday night. That's June 3rd. And that is also a night that kicks off a relatively new offering in all this mix, because our organization is also growing and evolving. And as Portland shifts and changes and as movements move forward, our work is to, of course, move with that and to make sure that we're not too behind in the times. And so one of the things that we realized is really important to address is that there are a lot of other cities that are looking for the tools and resources and understanding, not just to like host a single project, but actually how to facilitate a larger scale neighborhood-based community gathering event in their city where they live. And so we realized that it's really important to address that as well. So we now put on a 4-evening training called the Village Building Design Course, where whether you live in Portland or you live in another city across the country, we are supporting a much deeper understanding in this training on all of the intricate pieces and details and considerations as how to scale up that movement. So great to have a single project, better if they can band together. That's what we've found over the last 18 years. Mm-hmm. And as the world needs rapid, hyper-local change, we are wanting to make sure that people are as trained up as possible. And so that Village Building Design course begins with Mark Lakeman presenting on some of the history and inspiration of the Village Building Convergence, and then the three subsequent nights, Monday night, Tuesday night, and Wednesday night, the core staff of City Repair facilitate this training.
Fantastic. Let's go ahead and bring David on. Good morning, David. You're on the air.
Hello. I just wanted to kind of chime in with some of the projects that Poetry Boxes is doing around Portland, and kind of do a little bit of a plug for the Portland Poetry Boxes and Doug Trotter, David Cook, myself, and we're building Poetry Boxes around Portland and shipping them out as far as the East Coast.
So Montana. let's back up for just one moment and say, what is a poetry box?
Oh, okay. Poetry box is it's the same concept as the Little Tree Library.
Yeah.
But it's it displays a poem, and then the person that it curates it has, you know, more poems in there that you can take. And there's a high concentration of them around Portland. There's like over 300, and there's clusters in Northeast, clusters around Mount Tabor. And basically people share poems with their neighbors and anybody that's walking by.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
And so go ahead and now that we know what they are and where there are some clusters, are you one of the originators of the idea?
I'm one of the originators. Doug Trotter started out. He built probably around 200 of the boxes that are around Portland, and I'm building them out of recycled eBay and mahogany, mostly decking material, and Western red cedar.
Is there anywhere where there's mapping, or are these just you're going to have to wander around and find them serendipitously?
That part of the charm is that you kind of happen upon them.
Sure.
And I am working on a map right now. That my my computer skills are not that advanced as far as logging in, making a database that would contain a picture and some information about Fox. But it definitely started. And I'm actually filing for a nonprofit status so that I can get more people organizing this, because it's such a integrated project that has tendrils in, you know, the local building community, in libraries, in schools, the music, the local Portland music team can use it for posting lyrics, to get, and it's a great way to promote forest products.
Hey, David, thank you so much for your call. Is there any way for people, our listeners, to connect with you and the Little Poetry Box project?
You can go to the website, poetryboxes.com, or you can contact me, david@poetryboxes.com.
All right. Thank you very much for the information.
I really love hearing about those kinds of things. I'm sure that some of the folks, my colleagues in City Repair, know about this. A popular one that's related, similar, are the little free libraries, and we've seen those springing up. And it's just a feature, whether or not folks even knew they existed, if you stumble upon something like that, just the fact that it's possible.
Yeah.
The possibility, that's really, I think, where the richness is. And then, of course, utilizing that and integrating a little bit more, that does build community resiliency. I want to make sure that our listeners know how to find out more about the Village Building Convergence.
Please.
And we have a website. It's villagebuildingconvergence.com. The schedule is being updated daily. We're going to have a map of projects that are happening. So if you're curious, if there's a project that's happening near you, you should be able to find that information on our website very soon. And then some folks are interested in a specific kind of project. Like, I really want to learn how to work with roundwood, or I want to learn more about natural building, or I want to learn a little bit more about ecological or permaculture-based gardening. You can also search project sites this year by type, and then visit the site that will help you get the skills that you feel like you need to employ in your own life and in your own community, in your own neighborhood. And so the richness of this event just kind of keeps building its momentum forward. And, you know, who knows what's going to happen in a couple of years. There's just so much that is unknown. But what we do know is that this community gathering function through the Village Building Convergence, through just simply having potlucks as neighbors and opportunities for connecting and talking, having celebrations that get people back into the crossroads of their community, all of these things make sure that we don't forget and lose our knowledge of what is possible and what we can do. And this is possible and we can do it.
Right, absolutely. And to me, again, the idea that we have lost much of the commons, or the idea of the commons in this country, I have had the opportunity to work on a number of neighborhood councils, and one of the saddest things I ever heard was a neighborhood cop saying that, well, you know, maybe there should be time limits in parks. Specifically, this was a private park, the city's only private park that I know of, which is gone now. It was the St. Francis Park. Saying that, you know, we should have time limits there because if somebody has more than an hour, hour and a half to hang out in a park, they're doing something that shouldn't be done. That's suspect. Who has that kind of time? And I thought that was really one of the saddest things I've ever heard, because in fact, we don't have much in the way of commons, but we do have our parks, and this is one of the very few public places that we can gather and just hang out with friends and neighbors and families. The idea of actually creating more common space where neighbors can actually just spend evenings together, you know, not on any one front porch, not any one person having to host, but holding a common space together just, again, seems so very healing, actually, so very necessary and so very healing. I am excited that the Village Building Convergence continues on into its 18th year. And I want to just spend our last couple of minutes making sure that folks know how to connect in and participate if they want to, or if they have more questions and curiosities. How do people connect?
So again, our website is one of our biggest sources of information on this event. It's villagebuildingconvergence.com. And whenever I'm introducing the Village Building Convergence to somebody, I always say just look it up in a search engine, Village Building Convergence, Portland, and you will get a really quick impression of the incredible creativity that communities have manifested and built, created in their communities, and that's a really inspiring thing. So nothing that's been done necessarily has to be what you do. Come up with something new. Really answer the question, what is it that our community needs that will help us feel more connected, maybe less reliant on outside inputs, and start there. It can be really small, but the hopes are that by planting that seed and by asking that question and just inviting other people's ideas to come in, that creates something that can grow very easily, just given a little bit of time. And organizations like the City Repair Project really want to support your efforts. And so if you want to participate, you know, come as a participant, kind of a walk-on role for our daytime events, show up to some of our evening events. If you want to check us out, we really invite you to do that. And if you're inspired and you want to bring some of this closer to home, think about what kind of a project might suit your community well, and send us the request for, fill out the request for information and send it in. And we don't say yes or no, just the act of filling out that information form, it lets us know that you've been thinking about it, and so we'll bring you into our weekly trainings to make sure that you're on track.
More of a self-check process, more than like, oh, can you approve us? It's more of a, how have you actually done, what kind of footwork have you done already?
Yeah,
more like that. And again, from the 1st through the 10th, many projects around the city, and John Young will be speaking on the 1st where?
So our venue space for some of the evening programs is the Carvelin Hall, which is right down the road from our office on Division Street. So it's like Division and 16th. That information is also on the website. And we do have a couple of workshops. So John's giving a day-long workshop on Saturday. That's the following Saturday, June 2nd. We have a couple of other workshop offerings. There's a spoon carving workshop with one of the natural building heroes, Kiko Denzer. He wrote the book, I think, on making cob ovens. And we have, I think, on the second Friday, so that would be, June 8th, we're going to have an energy justice panel, and we're currently putting together our lineup for that. So stay tuned for who's going to be on that. But we've been working with a number of groups to try to bring a message of what are some of the efforts going on right now that support us in being more energy independent, and what are some actions and measures and things that are happening right now that will help support that. So that's coming
Fantastic.
Together. That's formative. And we're rolling out more information literally by by the day and by the week, and so stay tuned. If you have a specific question, I'd be more than happy to answer it for you. My email is matt@cityrepair.org. That's matt@cityrepair.org. And our website, again, is villagebuildingconvergence.com.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Matt, for joining us this morning. And I'm really excited for another year of Village Building starting June 1st. Also want to remind folks about the actions we mentioned at the very beginning of the show. That is the Holgate Manor Tenants Union. There is a rally tomorrow in support of the Holgate Manor Tenants Union at Kenilworth Park, 1 to 4 p.m. That's tomorrow, Saturday, May 5th. And then, of course, on Monday, outside of Chase, that's across from Pioneer Square, 811 Southwest 6th Avenue, there will be a rally supporting 350 PDX for a National Day of Action, asking customers to move their money away from Chase. And that's because Chase is the number one funder of fossil fuel infrastructure in the U.S. and is the only U.S. funder of the LNG terminal at Jordan Cove in Coos Bay. Astute caller Edie called earlier in the show to mention a gathering today, 5:30 to 7:30, on the west end of the Hawthorne Bridge, underneath the Hawthorne Bridge at NATO and Jefferson, in support of human rights in the Philippines. Stay tuned for oh so much coming up on your community radio station at 9 o'clock Pacific Underground.
Cable Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Derby Day Our Way, a Kentucky Derby Day party on Saturday, May 5th at 1 p.m. at the Jupiter Hotel in Portland. The Urban League of Portland Young Professionals Kentucky Derby Day Party combines community, fierce fashion, food, booze, music, and 3 minutes of horse racing from Kentucky. Again, that's Derby Day Our Way, a Kentucky Derby Day party on Saturday, May 5th from 1 to 5 p.m. at the Jupiter Hotel, 800 East Burnside Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.